Hello, Madison. Welcome to the Wisconsin Energy Broadcast, a show about clean tech, renewable energy, and the ways this rapidly growing industry is changing how we think about power. The Wisconsin Energy Broadcast is a project of the Perpetual Notion Machine. Now, here's your host, Heather Allen and Nan Fay.
Hey, good evening. Welcome to the Wisconsin Energy Broadcast. I am here in the studio with my co-host, Nan Fay.
Good evening.
And my fellow co-host, Kelly Schwartz from the Perpetual Notion Machine.
Woo, represent.
And we have our two guests tonight to talk about Wisconsin opportunity in domestic energy production, the economic and health benefits of 100% in-state energy production. Welcome, David Abel and Katja Spear. Would you please introduce yourselves?
Yeah, thanks for having us. So my name is David Abel. Like you said, I'm a postdoctoral researcher at the University of Wisconsin with COWS, which used to stand for the Center on Wisconsin Strategy. It's a high road policy think and do tank.
Hi, and thanks for having us. My name is Katja Spear. I'm a senior associate at COWS, which is a center at the UW-Madison in the sociology department, and with the Mayor's Innovation Project, which is a project of COWS.
Excellent. Well, thank you both for being here today. So before we get started, both Katja and David are big fans of WART, and so they want you, while they're telling you about in-state energy production, so let's dig into the report. Nan, I think you wanted to get started.
Yeah, I'm curious what the origin of this report is, because it's a hypothetical situation, thinking outside the box about what we could have in Wisconsin if we were dependent on renewable energy. So I'd be very curious to know, and I think our viewers, our listeners would too, how did this come about?
Yeah, great question. So one of the ways that COWS and the Mayor's Innovation Project works in Wisconsin and really around the country is closely with local governments. And so this question really came to us from a local government in Wisconsin. It came to us from a sustainability director in La Crosse County, which is a local government entity that we work with closely on a number of different projects. So most notably through the Green Tier Legacy Communities Network, which is a network of Wisconsin local governments committed to sustainability practices and work around climate. So it was a question that their sustainability director kicked out to us and had been asking of a number of different entities around the state. It seemed like a great opportunity, a great fit, as David mentioned, think of ourselves as a think and do tank. This is really part of that think. And then the rest of the work that we do with local governments is really, how might you institutionalize that? How might you systematize that and work on it? So like you said, Nan, it was a really kind of a thought project to see how is this a possibility for Wisconsin? What would the effect be?
Yeah, and I think fortunately it's becoming less hypothetical as we mm-hmm. see news out of Minnesota and here with Governor Evers and even Illinois making pledges to actually go to 100% renewable mm-hmm. energy by 2050.
That's right. And actually, the other really intriguing fact that I just had never really wrapped my head around till I read this was that Wisconsin doesn't have traditional fossil fuel sources within our borders. So can you say a little bit about what that means for Wisconsin's economy?
Well, in essence, that means anything that burns a fossil fuel in the state of Wisconsin. So cars, coal power plants, natural gas power plants, all of those things are using fuels that were produced elsewhere. And that means the jobs exist mostly elsewhere. And that means the dollars are flowing away from our state. And so we call it an energy deficit of about $14.4 billion every year that leaves the state.
That's a pretty shocking number.
There's a lot of things we could fund with $14 billion if we kept them at home, or just, you know, even reinvest in our local economies. If that money is circulating in the local economy, we're all a lot better off. More, you know, people are going to restaurants, people are shopping. So, okay, so what, can you just give us a quick overview? What does the report tell us? So we're sending $14 billion out of state when we buy these fossil fuels, coal and gas and everything else. If we shifted to 100% renewables, what would that look like?
Yeah, so the issue is we're sending $4.4 billion out of state. So then the question is, well, how do we solve that, right? And the first thing you have to assess is, do we actually have resources for energy in the state of Wisconsin that we can use? And of course, the sun shines in Wisconsin and the wind blows in Wisconsin and water flows in Wisconsin. And all of these things are ways that we could produce energy. And sure, it may not be as sunny as Arizona sometimes, and it may not be as windy as Iowa sometimes. But the first thing that we realized was actually we have about 22 times as much energy coming from those resources in Wisconsin than what we use every year. So feasibility, check. We can do it, right? Mm-hmm. And so then the question is just an impact assessment. What would be the impact if we were to do that? And presumably, you know, it would be good for the economy, right? We're not sending $14.4 billion away or out of the state. But we also assess things like tax benefits and the air pollution benefits of public health and, you know, the myriad of water pollution and other things that we didn't even assess in the report that come along with that.
So did I understand that correctly, that you said 22% of the amount of energy we use could be 22 times the amount of energy we use could be provided by renewable energy here in the state? So even if we only harnessed a small fraction of it, we would cover our energy needs?
Yeah, so the technical term that they use is technical potential of a resource. So technically, given what we use land for and things like that and how much the sun shines and how much the wind blows, we have about 22 times the amount of energy we use. And so for an example of that, for solar photovoltaics alone, we only use about a 1.5% in our scenario in the report of what we could. And that then provides about a third of the energy for Wisconsin.
I think the other really exciting thing that this report shows is that the numbers in the report here, they don't depend on any giant leap in technological advancement. They don't depend on behavior change. It's just the cold hard facts of what is the potential here.
And that's economic potential and technical potential, right? That's the feasibility of the technology to provide the power and the economics of the power provision.
Yes. So the 22 times is on technical potential.
Okay.
And then when you bring the actual economics into it of would you rather build a natural gas plant or would you rather build a solar plant or a wind plant, then we get to about 50% of our energy could be economically feasible today.
Okay.
So can we, back to the report, can we talk a little bit about the jobs aspect of this hypothesis of what kind of increase in jobs, and also even a surprising corollary to that was income tax benefits that would come to the state from making more of a commitment to renewable energy?
Yeah, let's talk about jobs. So the big number, right, is we have about 160,000 jobs in energy in the state right now. And by switching to 100% renewables, we would add about 162,000 more. So we can double the number of jobs we have in energy in Wisconsin just from switching to renewables. And so, of course, the question we always get, right, is won't we lose jobs in fossil fuels, right? Well, it turns out we only have about 8,000 jobs in oil and natural gas and coal anyway. So adding 162,000 versus losing 8,000 is a win-win for sure.
So it's really about growing an industry in the state that does, is, you know, it's in its infancy, really. But if we grew it, we would grow the jobs, we would grow the indirect economic benefits, the tax benefits of all this economic activity of renewable energy in the state. And it's really about, you know, whether or not renewable energy is your preferred type of energy. It's, there's nothing else we can just do on our own here in Wisconsin because of the way the resources we have in the state. But we have sun and wind, and we can use them to grow an industry. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's very exciting. And I think I recently heard that Solar Installer is one of the most fastest growing jobs in the state. Even though, you know, we haven't been one of a state leader among states in terms of installing renewable, but it's still a great opportunity. We had some students here on the on the program once who were in a training program. Mm-hmm. So have you talked, was it La Crosse who was interested in this? Were they interested in that aspect of it?
They were interested broadly in the economic jobs benefit and the benefit to the health benefit, especially.
Yeah. Can you speak to that? Can you highlight what are the concrete health benefits, you know, avoided asthma or air pollution? Mm-hmm. Talk about that.
Yeah, so my background, I actually studied here for 5 years getting my PhD mainly on air pollution. And it's a kind of hidden harm in some ways that since it's gotten cleaner, since it was, you know, 1960 or 70 and you could actually walk out and see it, people think the problem is solved. But that is not true. And it turns out that just by going to 100% renewable energy and removing the combustion that happens in cars and power plants and the ways that we use energy, we could save about $22 billion a year, if I'm reading my numbers right, which I am, in...
$22 billion in health,
in
avoided
health
savings, costs?
Yes.
Wow.
To get a little bit more specific, that would be 35,000 almost asthma cases a year, 873,000 minor restricted activity days, 150,000 work loss days. I mean, these are direct benefits to us as humans, but also to the economy as well.
And am I remembering correctly that here in Madison and probably Milwaukee too, we're at risk of non-attainment penalties from EPA? Can you say a little bit about how that works?
Yeah, so this is a big deal with a lot of regulatory consequences. The coast of Lake Michigan has some unique chemistry and meteorological patterns that mean that the counties along the shore of Lake Michigan are very often either exceeding or close to exceeding national air standards for ozone. And actually, we don't talk that much about ozone in the report. We focus mostly on fine particulates, which is just anything in the air that's really small and goes deep inside your lungs when you breathe it. But ozone's a big problem in the state, and it has a big economic impact. Things like industry, and actually it turns out that at the end of the line, the funding that comes with the highways is actually tied to whether you achieve air pollution standards or not, believe it or not. But more directly, if you live in Milwaukee or some of these counties, you may have had to go in and get your car emissions tested. All of these are direct impacts of the fact that the regulations are not being achieved in those areas.
Katya and I have actually spent the day together because my work and her work, our day jobs, brought us to the Equitable Deep Decarbonization Summit today. And we were talking about how the impacts of energy use are not equally distributed across the state or across the country, that there are certain geographic regions and also certain demographic groups separated by race and income level that experience more of the health consequences of fossil fuel and electricity production. Can you speak to that a little bit and how depending on where you live or who you are, you actually may face more of the consequences of the fact that majority of our power comes from coal?
Yeah, I can speak to it broadly. And in fact, I actually happened to be looking at this a little bit last night. It turns out the Midwest region, Wisconsin as a whole, is one of the worst places for this type of environmental justice of air pollution. And it makes sense when you think about it. If we're going to build a coal power plant somewhere, it ends up either being placed in somewhere where land values are cheap, or it drives real estate prices down after it's built. And then the equity piece of that kind of comes naturally. And unfortunately, that's a horrible thing, and one that could feasibly be, at least mitigated by investing in renewable energy.
Hmm. Another way to speak to that, too, is the jobs question, right? Because these jobs it's not a given that these jobs are going to be good, family-supporting jobs, but they are more likely to be than most jobs in the fossil fuel industry. And it's a huge potential for growth in the job industry that could accrue to those very regions and parts of the state that you're talking about right now.
Another aspect of the growth in jobs was a comment that I saw in the report that these additional energy jobs would generate more income tax that could be used to help transition to the 100% electric in certain kinds of, it was described as maybe like difficult situations or challenging situations. Could you be a little more specific about what you had in mind for that?
Yeah, so some of the ways that we use energy, it may be really difficult to change. I'm thinking maybe really heavy equipment that runs on diesel fuel, that's not going to be replaced overnight. Some of these things that are difficult to just flip a switch and switch to electricity or biofuels or something like that. And in those cases, if there's a pool of money like $458 million a year from new income tax, then that could be used to ease that burden to actually transition to a different alternative.
We kind of just have to be open to thinking big.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thinking.
And we'll go back to our conversation with our guests about the potential for Wisconsin if we went 100% renewable energy. There's a very interesting pie chart on page 5 of your report that shows Actually, a whole lot more resources than I might have thought were harnessable in Wisconsin that we already have here. Could you talk a little bit about these? Not necessarily their relative contributions, but I think it's an interesting list that not everybody would think of as potential renewable energy sources that we already have here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, of course. So I like to think of this as just a few different categories, one being the sun, one being the wind, one being water and rivers, and then the other being the land. And of course, the last then being use less energy and energy efficiency itself. Mm-hmm. But with the sun, you know, it's broken into two different ways. We have big utility scale solar projects where there's a bunch of solar panels in a field or something like that, what you can imagine. And then the other one is distributed or rooftop. And so that's what you would put on your building, your school, your own home, something like that. And then wind also is broken into two categories. We can have it, again, on the fields or on land somewhere, hilltops. But we can also potentially put it on Lake Michigan and Lake Superior as well. And offshore wind could play a big role in the future of Wisconsin's energy. And then with the land, there's a couple different things there, right? The easy, obvious one is biomass because it's already so prevalent here. And actually, in the study, we assume that we don't add any more biomass or ethanol production in the state, but it remains constant. Then the other ones I think are a little bit, you know, floofier maybe or less common are geothermal or ground source heat pumps, a lot of times it's called in the building industry. This would be, you know, something that you might do in the design of a building so that you pump water underground or some sort of refrigerant underground to help heat and cool your building. But also along those lines, it turns out there's some developing technology to actually use enhanced geothermal to pump that same type of liquid very, very deep in the ground and produce steam to then create electricity from it.
That's very deep in the ground.
Very deep in the ground, yes. So this is the type of thing you might hear happening like around Yellowstone where they have, you know, access to heat closer to the surface. But, you know, with technological advances, this could happen in Wisconsin as well, just on a much deeper, larger pump.
Well, and to your point about efficiency and actually reduced use, we recently interviewed representatives and students from the Oregon School District. They're planning to design zero net energy schools. So that's a large scale project for a zero net energy building, but you know they're gonna do that. So there's a trend.
Yeah. And that's really the next frontier for any report like this, right? How do you use that to then inform plans, and then at the local government level policies? Like, how can we use this to better inform local land use policies, local solar ready policies, and things of that sort?
So, Katya and David, what's next? Where do you want to see this information going? How do you want policymakers to use it? What should the general public take away? What's the message?
Yeah, so it's a great question, right? Because this is a really fun thought exercise from a university think tank. The next step, as I mentioned, is really for local governments, for people across the state to take this and figure out the how, right? The how at the state, local policy level. So one of the things that we do at COWS is we work with cities and counties and different kinds of local government entities on kind of what are the best practices from around the country that one might operate. In Wisconsin, of course, we have a number of restrictions on that at the local level. Preemption from the state is a real thing for local governments. And so it's really starting the conversation about what are the local policies to put this into practice. What are the state policy levers? There's a lot of great opportunity here. But did you want to say?
Yeah, and one of the best things about it is really that there is no one roadmap mm-hmm. to accomplishing this. We have a lot of options and we can move the needle a lot of ways mm-hmm. without making one big sweeping declaration. So hopefully we can provide some resources and this as a nice goal setting and mm-hmm. you know, exercise to see what the potential benefits would be so that we can start moving that needle ever so slowly until it just starts to fly off then.
You know, and things are catching fire. I mean, just yesterday, the Public Service Commission had a hearing about the two large-scale solar projects that are proposed for Iowa County and then Kewaunee, Manitowoc counties. That's the Badger Hollow Solar Farm and the Two Creek Solar Farm. That together would more than quadruple the total of solar in the state of Wisconsin. We don't have a decision yet, so we'll hear about that. We hope in the near future. Monona, the city of Monona, just voted to go 100% renewable, and that's big news. So they're on a path to change a bunch of their different processes and programs so that they can be a renewable city. Things are just happening.
And at all levels. I mean, I put solar on my house this past year. Heather has it on hers. You know, the city's doing it on its buildings. American Family has 2.5 acres of solar on the roof of their building. It's happening in the, you know, at the residential level, public, private. It's really
Madison
exciting.
College just energized right. the largest solar rooftop project in the state of Wisconsin last month. I mean, well, January being last month, I'm 1 month behind, but there's a lot happening. So thank you for doing the research to show us that it's feasible for us to get there and to save billions of dollars for the state of Wisconsin.
And if listeners are interested, I did post a link to the report on our Facebook page. So you can check it out directly there.
Thanks, Kelly.
Kelly's our master of social media.
That's right. And thanks again to Katya and David.
Yes, thank you for being here tonight. Thanks to my co-host, Nan.